Today's episode is part of a series in response to the COVID-19 outbreak. We'll be releasing a podcast every week that will help charities to A, navigate the rapid digital changes that, you know, have been thrust upon us, B, you know, hopefully set your charity up for digital going forward, and C, provide you with a platform for you to, you know, seek advice and share your stories. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us about how to be more digital, or if you'd like to share how your organisation has coped with the COVID-19 environment, reach out to us at podcasts@charitydigital.org.uk or follow the link in the description. Thanks and enjoy the pod.
Hello, it's Mimi here from Charity Digital, and I'm your host for our latest Charity Digital podcast. You're tuning into our fourth episode of the COVID-19 bonus podcast series. If you have been a part of these series already, then you may have noticed a slight change in sound quality. We do usually host our podcasts in a studio in Shoreditch, but given the current times, we're all joining virtually. So we do apologise if there are any interruptions or a drop in quality. The main focus of this podcast is looking at the impact of COVID-19 on charities and how they can use digital to maintain their services, impact and navigate through what are potentially sufficient funding challenges. Throughout this podcast, we'll be touching on different aspects of digital which charities have had no choice but to face given the current circumstances. Those who were once distant from a digital have had to adapt and make it their everyday normality in working and personal life. Anyway, enough from me, and now time to introduce our lovely speakers. We have Trillium joining us today. Trillium delivers digital transformation for charity and non-profit organisations by bringing together strategy, digital and CRM. Trillium transforms the entire user experience, improving acquisition, retention and engagement. If you attended our conference, you may have had the pleasure to meet the team in person, but for now, let me virtually introduce you to Alan Peristrello, the co-founder and director.
Good morning, everybody.
And Ike Pito, head of marketing.
Hello.
Not only do we have Trillium with us for the first time, joining us on the other side of the conversation is Jonathan Chevalier, Charity Digital's very own CEO.
Hello, it's nice to be here again.
How is everyone doing?
Yeah, great.
Pretty good considering. It's a nice sunny day outside.
In the comfort of our own homes, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, found a room with no children in it. So that's always a bonus.
Yes, all the distractions. I've shut all my flatmates out of the lounge today. So let's get into it. Whether we can believe it or not, we're a month into the lockdown. Alan, you talk to a lot of charities in your day to day. Where do you think they are with this journey?
Well, I think, you know, the thing that strikes me about it is actually just how resilient people are in the sector, because I think people have just really taken it in their stride. So I'm really impressed with how people have just adapted to it, specifically with kind of day-to-day technical sort of challenges. You know, we're ostensibly a kind of IT company, so we've always been able to respond quickly to a technical challenge. But for a lot of our clients and their staff, you know, working remotely and having the systems to do that, some of them don't have it, but they've responded really well, really well. So very impressed with everybody in that sense. And yeah, people are just getting on with, you know, the challenge at hand. And I think that speaks volumes for the resilience and the nature of the sector that we're all working in.
Lovely. Jonathan, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think what we've seen is some really rapid progress. So people have done the urgent things, they've transitioned their services online in some way if they've needed to. But I don't think we're necessarily seeing what I'll call fully formed mature services yet. So my sense is that it's important to keep moving, so to keep building out those services, you know, to make sure that they are fully secure, that they're safe if they're working with vulnerable people, and they're considering other elements of their service user interaction. So a lot of people have done things like, you know, take a service onto Zoom, but not done anything else that wraps around that. So I do think it's great progress, but it's important to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we've been talking a lot about how charities have kind of been forced into being more digital very quickly. And even though it's probably been quite a painful transition for quite a lot of charities, it could ultimately be a good thing. And it's a good step moving forward. But with many charities anticipating a significant drop in income, how will they be able to finance further digital activity?
Yeah, I think it's probably the elephant in the room that I think most people are kind of having to deal with. And it is a challenge. You know, we're seeing obviously a lot of organizations, struggling to maintain the same number of donations, the same volume of activity, and at the same time having to respond to continuing to support their service users. So I think that causes its own challenges. But echoing kind of what Jonathan was saying is that I think we're past the first phase now, and I think we need to start thinking a little bit more medium to long term. Now that we know kind of a little bit more about what the world looks like, and I think the biggest kind of challenge in that is kind of finding a way of balancing the budgets and prioritizing really. So for me, I think it's about prioritizing anything that's going to really change and improve the way that a charity can continue to deliver its service to its service users, stakeholders, whatever they might be. But I think you're just focusing down on that and doing whatever they can to kind of facilitate that in a new world.
Yeah, brilliant. Aika, do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of looking at your budget, the sort of temptation is probably to have a knee-jerk reaction and, look at the sort of things like, events like the marathon being cancelled and all these big holes that were potentially going to be coming through with the sort of fundraising that you'd be making. But, a sort of research that's already coming out in terms of the countries that have come before us, but also sort of, the equivalent challenges we've had with financial crashes is if you go completely quiet and silent, that's going to damage you more in the long run. So it's important to sort of, you've got to obviously reforecast and rebudget and do something different. But I think it's about, looking at what you do have and trying to be clever with it and not just panicking completely, which would be understandable. And just sort of trying to be a bit agile and look at what your objectives are in that new world, and just try and keep some level of momentum, because we will come out the other side of this and you won't still be there at the end of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And sorry, Jonathan, did you want to?
Yeah, I was going to build on that a little bit more as well, because it's kind of becoming increasingly clear that the situation we're in is going to, whilst it's not going to stay exactly the same, we're going to kind of see continuing interruptions. So kind of what we call business as usual, which was what was happening in 2019, isn't going to be totally returning, maybe until sometime in 2021. So charities were thinking, we've done the minimum, we can just forget about it now and let that tick over and then go back. That's kind of not really going to cut it. They're going to have to think about how they're going to really mature these services a little bit more. And in actual fact, if service users like this way of interacting with them, then actually shouldn't they be providing it anyway? I guess the other thing is to kind of think about how technology can actually save money for them as well. So the right technology moves can enable you to deliver your services more efficiently. Probably some charities are seeing that already. So services that they're delivering, in an hour over Zoom, where maybe somebody previously got in a car and drove to a venue to see somebody, that's obviously saved a lot of time and expense. So they can use the technology in that way. There might be some kind of cash flow challenges. I'm not kind of glossing on this, but from a strategic perspective, they might actually want to look at how they continue to invest more to actually save themselves money in the longer term. Because if they're going to have an income drop, they'll obviously have less money to actually deliver on the services.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see just kind of how people make those decisions and what they can, invest in digitally. And like Aika was saying, is maintain relevance. And I think that's kind of the key point, is to stay relevant and in top of mind for both donors and for the service users, and to then close the loop, I think, by just continuing to illustrate the good work that still happens. It's obviously important that, a lot of the conversation at the moment is around kind of budget cuts. But I think what I've seen is some really good stories coming out of how people are adapting and responding to this using kind of the digital tools that they've got at their disposal. And in a lot of cases, the conversation now is, how can I use these tools to actually save me money? Because now the opportunity to really look at where are we spending money and what are we actually getting for it is now being forced on people. Whereas before, I think it was kind of an optional thing, and you know, we get around to that in the budget cycle, and you know, Malaise probably just around dealing with those challenges.
Yeah, I mean, I think often when we get sort of requests for support before this, you know, there'd be such a wide, you know, parameter of sort of wish list things that people would give you. Whereas actually now, I think it should be a lot easier for people to be focused on what they need. That luxury has sort of been taken away. And perhaps I think before there was a lot of, well, we don't really know if we haven't got a very strong strategy, what we should be focused on. Whereas I think now, you know, well, I think a really good example, I saw a really good meme going around, which sort of was, you know, what led your digital transformation? Was it A, your CEO, B, your CTO, or C, COVID? And I think COVID is circled now for quite a lot of people, and that might be the reality. But actually, you know, it's normally when you say things like digital transformation, it's such a big investment for a charity that it can take quite a long time to think about and move on. Whereas now I think things are coming to very sharp focus and there's just a reality of what needs to be done. And so I guess it's trying to take advantage of a negative and, you know, turn it into a positive. And, you know, there is a big justification for investing and getting stuff moving, even if it's in a more discreet way than you would have done before.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that actually leads quite nicely onto the next question of, how can charities identify these areas of greatest impact and where can they get that payback from?
I think for me, this is where kind of the use of data is really becoming a pretty kind of a key focal point for a lot of organizations, because I think, you know, what we've just been saying is kind of, you know, you're going to have to do stuff to maintain relevance. You first have to identify what does relevance mean and for who and where can you make that biggest impact? Because if you've got limited resources, you really want to focus them on where they're going to have the greatest impact. And I think that's where people are now starting to really look at understanding the data they have at their disposal. And that is great, but it also can illustrate just the lack of data available and useful data. So we were having a conversation yesterday with a prospective client at a charity, and they have a whole data team who have almost exhausted all of their capabilities because they just don't have actually sufficient data to query and to draw some conclusions. The tricky thing there is, I guess, is the time that it actually takes to be able to generate useful data. So what will happen is that, you know, we'll typically see this as a request. We need to see better data. We need to understand more. But if you're not capturing that data, it takes a while to get the system in place to start capturing the data, and then you can start doing the analysis. So I think you know, it's one of these things that you kind of wish you'd started, you know, a while back. Probably a little bit like my current personal challenge, if I can share that with everybody, is that my shower has been making a noise for about 6 weeks, and I just neglected it because I've just had a lot of other things to worry about. But it eventually packed up on Sunday, and I'm not a bath person. So right now my focus has been really on just trying to get some shower parts, which is tough in the current world, but it really brings into sharp focus the fact that I really should have done that thing that I've known is a problem building. I should have dealt with it 6 weeks ago, because now the pain is far greater than I've just ordered the parts and dealt with it on a Saturday afternoon. And I think the data challenge is kind of the same thing. You know, you've got to start now if you want to see results in 6 months or 12 months time, because it isn't a flick, a switch, and you just have the data.
No, definitely. Yeah. I think that's a really good point as well to bring up.
Yeah, I very much agree with that as well. So charities have probably done some actions quite quickly. One of the next actions I would say to do quickly, if you're not collecting the data you need, is actually to put in place some of the data collection mechanisms so that you can have much more informed decision making down the line. Because otherwise those decisions are going to be kind of made on personal opinion. And best practice in digital is to make evidence-based decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Alan, you mentioned some tools there. What kind of tools can charities use to get better data, and how quickly can they get these out there? Because obviously everything's happening right now. So what can they do?
I think the first one that springs to mind is good old Google Analytics. You know, it's probably installed on, you know, 99% of all websites out there. So we know that we have it, but it tends to be a data source that's kind of left alone to just gather data and you know, if we're just looking at it to understand page visits and bounce rates, that's great, but it isn't actually telling us anything. So I think an area that people could be investing some energy in now is just looking into Google Analytics data and creating some goals and some conversion stats that will actually allow you to start answering questions. So I think the reason I like the Google Analytics one is because kind of contradicting my previous point is because it's been in place for such a long time and it kind of collects a lot of things at source, it's been collecting a lot of data. So there is a massive repository of information available to any organization, but specifically charities, in terms of what they could understand. The other one that I quite like is to use Hotjar. And I see it, you know, increasing in prevalence. You know, the free tier is actually really useful. You can get it installed and you can do some great things like actually doing screen recording. So you can actually take a look at what people are doing. There are ways to configure it so it's GDPR compliant, so you don't have to really worry about the data collection element. But you can actually just watch people and see, you know, how they're using your services and understand where there are pain points and just fixing those little pain points. It could be a disruption in an online journey, you know, it could be a donate journey, or it could be a volunteer journey, or it could be, you know, I'm asking for help. Just understanding that and just seeing, you could literally fix a major issue in a day. And then I think looking forward, I think, you know, there's good old fashioned research that I think is probably more Ica's forte than mine, but your members are, your customers, your donors, your stakeholders, just knowing who they are so that you can actually focus on them. And I think that there's some old-fashioned tools at our disposal that we could be using.
Yeah, I mean, sort of going back to your point, the other reason I love Hotjar, actually, from a marketing perspective, is because the way the heat mapping displays, it's incredibly strong internal tool as well, because if you see a screen with lots of blue where you would like lots of red, i.e. where you want people to be clicking on, that's just a very easy way to easily sell in an argument internally about why you should be doing something differently or changing things, and particularly right now where you need to move quickly. I think that's quite vital. Back to Alan's other point about knowing your sort of stakeholders, I think, you know, hopefully everybody will have some knowledge about that already, but right now in the current climate, I think do simple things like ask them, you know, surveys. You can just have, it doesn't have to be some sort of big, long, in-depth extravaganza. You can just put some really quick questions up on your website as people come and visit about what people need. Because the thing to remember, yes, there's a lot to do with, you know, obviously a massive concern about the donations and where they're coming through and the dropping of work that we can be done to try and sort of replace some of those income streams digitally. But don't forget the actual purpose of the charity's mission. You know, their charities are there for a reason. You know, one of my good friends who works for charity, she's the sort of head of information, and whilst they've had to furlough a lot of people, they haven't with the information team, because the demand for that information, they're a cancer charity, has just gone through the roof, because everybody is so concerned and so worried, and people don't want to be sold to at the moment. They want to be advised and supported, and charities are ideally placed to do that. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to look at your Google Analytics and see, you know, you'll learn something about everybody right now by the sort of content pages that everybody's going to. What is it that they're wanting and needing? You know, what's the change before COVID and after COVID, and sort of, you know, investing time in optimizing that, you know, sort of request for information and support will naturally help raise your profile and hopefully feed into improving sort of donations as things go forward.
Brilliant. Jonathan, did you have anything to add?
I think some of the easiest mechanisms have been picked out really nicely there. I guess if you've got a mailing system, then, you know, go back at it, look at it again and see whether you could get more information out of it, whether that might just require a little bit of different configuration in how you use it. Similarly, if you've got a CRM, then it might just be that you need to configure it that slightly bit differently in order to give you much better quality data. And I guess from a strategic perspective, you know, if you've just started delivering services digitally, then you're probably finding that you might want to now go to the next step of actually collecting more of that data about what's actually happening through those services. And that will mean actually starting to think a little bit more strategically about should you invest in a CRM if you haven't got one. And I do think, you know, it's a difficult point at this time when everything kind of seems very immediate, money's tight and all the rest. But at some stage, we need to start thinking strategically about this as well, and actually making some of the investments, difficult word at this time, I know, but some of the investments in the near future that are actually going to put the charities in a much better position to deliver in the future as well. So deliver later this year and deliver next year and the year after.
Yeah, I think we touched on a lot of good points there with the impact and a more digitally involved population of charities and everyone having to take that step. Let's deep further into this. So Aika, what would you say the impact of all of this would be and the impact of charities making the step?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, again, it's so hard at this time when there is so much sort of feeling of doom and gloom, and, you know, all we're seeing is charts of the economy falling off the sort of end of a very large cliff. And, you know, that obviously impacts, you know, the money in people's pockets, impacts the money that they give to a charity. But there are charts that are pointing the other way in a positive sense, in terms of the way that people are, the general population is using digital and engaging with it. Something that's really interesting for me, and I'm probably a bit biased because I'm a marketeer to look at these things, but is the rise of Zoom outside of a work scenario. I mean, Zoom before this, I think, was just the area for maybe tech startups, because bigger businesses would use Skype for business or Teams. And, you know, I think as individuals, people would maybe use FaceTime or, you know, WhatsApp and maybe Skype a bit. But everybody seems to have gone crazy on Zoom. And I think that's a really good example of, because of how easy it is to use the user journey, the experience of it is so intuitive that it feels, it's been really easy for everybody to adopt. I sort of found a stat saying that in the last 3 months, it's gone from active daily users, it's gone from 10 million to over 200 million, which is amazing when you look at it like that. And I think there's a lot of people who would never even occur to them to have that interaction who are getting used to it now. And I think it's about thinking about that. That will be the difference when life goes, hopefully, to some level of back to normal. As I think, you know, a lot of your stakeholders will be much more open to being engaged with digitally. You know, as Jonathan said earlier, people, perhaps some of these changes of more remote events and things which people might have been a bit less convinced by, now they're fully embracing. And so, you know, that should be something that we could hope to take advantage of in terms of not only saving money, but, you know, reaching more people as well.
Mm-hmm. So Aika, I actually wasn't aware of those statistics on Zoom growth. And I think that's really stunning growth. And actually it really shows the strength of cloud service delivery, because they've been able to scale that service in such a massive way without, you know, any of us seeing, because I've been a Zoom user for a long time and I haven't seen any drop off in the level of service quality at all. So I think we should all also take massive confidence that actually these types of services are really robust, they can scale, and we should be hugely confident in them. And maybe people before were a little bit worried and concerned in some areas about whether cloud services could do that, but the strength is proven here beyond doubt.
Yeah, completely. I think the digital side of things has opened up such a world of opportunity for people, and it's going to be good in so many ways, but also bad for those who are digitally excluded, whether that be physical reason or economic reasons. What could we suggest for those affected?
So I think, this is one of the areas I've been concerned about. So as you say, digital, being more digital for the general population, I think has actually been a good thing. But there are people who are excluded. Some of them are excluded for physical reasons, so that they're not easily able to use the technology, and others for economic reasons. And the solutions are slightly different for each of those. People who are being excluded for physical reasons, I think the onus to a large extent, us who are providing the technologies, you know, so if we're a charity providing it, for example, is to think about how we're providing that technology more inclusively. So, you know, a very simple example was when we ran our conference recently, we made sure that all the materials were captioned, so that if somebody who was deaf was attending the conference, they could see and participate in it fully as well. So I think there is a kind of an obligation on charities when they think about digitizing their services to actually think about that design for physical inclusion. I think when we look at the economic side of things, that can be more challenging. I think if you're a charity that knows you're dealing with that type of community, so community who don't have easy access to technology, maybe your project funding needs to actually consider more about how you get some of the technology into the hands of those people. And I'd also really like to see more of the grant givers and foundations kind of stepping up in this space. There've been a lot of funds coming out to support charities through COVID, but I haven't seen enough activity from them actually acknowledging that the response of the charities is to go more digital, and that therefore there will be people who are excluded from there, that and money needs to be put out there to help those people who are digitally excluded.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point, and I think it needs to be continually stressed, probably more so than some of the more kind of boring hygiene factors that are being stressed. I think on the good side, though, we currently are engaged with two grant giving bodies, and I can see that they are starting to recognize that now in terms of what they now have to do. Because I think that in an offline world, there was another way of dealing with the excluded. But in the digital world, I think the impact is probably even greater on those people who feel that they're excluded. So I think that we're all starting to see that some of the grant giving bodies, at least the ones that we're working with at the moment, are starting to see that, and they're building that into the kind of application process. But it will take time. And that's probably the problem here, is that do those users, do those service users, the ones most affected by it, have the time?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. I think we've discussed some really good but very difficult topics for charities. But I want to ensure we finish on some practical and positive advice. What would each of you suggest? Alan, should I come to you first?
Sure. I think going back to the first point, I think the positives are that the resilience and everybody's ability to just cope with kind of almost any future challenge. I can just see in 6 months' time, some of the things that used to stall projects or just cause lots of issues and indecision, those things just will be put into sharp focus and kind of going, compared to where we were now, people will just be like, that's fine, we can just do it. So I think the lessons learned will be that decision-making will probably improve. I think it's fair to say the not-for-profit sector is not kind of blessed with kind of the tools to make rapid decisions, but I think this process will have enabled so much more. And I think there are some great stories out there as well, and just in terms of how people are responding to this challenge and actually finding ways to break through and to make their kind of their value proposition heard and understood. And I think, we just have to look at, the amazing kind of Captain Tom Moore. That's just been an absolute amazing, illustration of the right message being delivered at the right time. And it's just done an amazing job. And I was looking at the stats this morning, it's 5,178% over his original target. 28 million pounds is probably greater than some of the biggest charity organizations in this country in terms of what they hope to generate in a year. So I think it shows that it can be done, that consumers are still, probably even more now, I think actually about myself, I've probably made more diverse donations in the past 6 weeks than I ever have. We've all got our favorites and we've got the causes that we back, but I've started to understand and pay attention to other causes I probably wouldn't have known needed help. And that's a great thing. I think that we should be able to look at that as a good positive that we can build on.
Yeah, I'd like to build on that point as well. So I think one of the hardest things about change is getting started. If you read a lot of the change management books, they talk about how organizations get very set in stone, vested interests become very entrenched, which makes it really difficult to get started. And the COVID crisis has actually had the the effect of kind of smashing through all of that concrete and making change start to happen. And the important thing once change starts to happen, because you've done the hardest thing, is to keep it going so that we don't move into a situation where everything solidifies again. So to me, it's a massive opportunity to build on change that's starting to happen. How do you do that? Well, I think there's two ways. I think you can be very tactical, and you can continue to look at, you know, small iterative steps you can take, and that's great and that's good. And that kind of keeps people used to the view that, you know, change, digital and change is kind of a continual and an evolutionary process. And I think there's also this opportunity to actually step back and look a little bit more strategically. You'll have seen some benefits from digital. So why not think more strategically about how you might be able to create a pot of funding? You know, you might need to go to grant givers to get that. You might need to run a special campaign. But think about how you could use that special pot of funding in order to maybe continue to change your services to actually enable you to reach a lot more service users in the future for a lot less money. So there's that opportunity to do that. In summary, you know, I think the crisis is going to be painful, but it is an opportunity to build something that long term is going to be a lot more impactful and sustainable.
So, yeah, looking at the you know, positives in something which seems sort of so overarchingly negative can be challenging, but I think there, you know, definitely are some, and I think it's important for us to find them because it keeps all our motivation up. I'm going to sort of lean on another statistics. I'm in marketing and I like that very much, in data. And a sort of report by AMI has identified that up until the sort of, to the end of March, there's been a 38% increase in the use of smartphones, which I think some people found surprising, because I think there's a sort of perception that as we're all stuck at home, any digital interaction is going to be on a laptop, you know, at a desk. But actually, people are far more looking at, you know, the sort of connection they have with people very quickly and briefly in their pockets, you know, through all the different apps and social media, and, you know, even if that's just applying to emails. And that really got me thinking about how amazing it is that, you know, the sort of power digital has to bring us all together. I was reflecting on how I felt when my daughter was born 9 years ago, and I felt so incredibly isolated. And without getting into the challenges of new motherhood, it wasn't just about that. It was because I was a working professional going into town and having all these interactions, and suddenly I didn't have anything. It was the time when Facebook, you know, you had to log on to a computer to use it. When you've got a baby, that's not that practical, whereas nowadays it's so easy just to put your hand in your pocket and bring out your phone and just have a quick skim through. And I think a really good example of the power of that is everybody clapping for our key workers on a Thursday night. That wave of goodwill, I think, has been generated purely by digital and social media, whether that's people sharing it in WhatsApp teams or, actually sort of encouraging through different messaging on charity campaigns. And it hasn't been done by the main media, even though they've picked up on it. And it goes to show that, you know, the goodwill is there, the engagement and the attention is there. You could even argue there's more attention than there was sort of always normally, because everybody is looking, I think, for those feel-good moments and the way that they feel that they can contribute and help. And so ultimately, I think we need to believe that there is still that opportunity and positive there and that goodwill out there in the public. And so it's just about finding a way that's right for you to engage with that and reach out. But ultimately, I think there is a really, you know, great opportunity for us to find a way of staying positive and you know, not just surviving this, but perhaps thriving in it.
Brilliant. And I think that is a brilliant place to end on. We have unfortunately run out of time today, but it has been lovely having you all with us. So thank you so much for joining us. And I know it wasn't in real time, but it was just as good. So I wanted to say a huge thank you to our listeners and to our wonderful speakers. And we look forward to speaking with you all soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, bye.